This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning, Senate local government. We'll now come to order. Special greetings to those listening over the internet. If you plan on testifying this morning, please be sure and sign in at the podium by the front door. If you're a lobbyist, please be sure your badge is visible. And if you have phones, please put them on silent mode so they don't go off and disrupt the meeting. If they go off, and you qualify to make a $20 donation to Teen Challenge. Okay, let's see if we have a quorum. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Senator Kamara.
Here.
Hewing.
Here.
Shane Fish.
Here.
Bismuth. No. Bamberg, excuse. Drew Hamill.
Here.
Jensen.
Here. Okay, we do have a quorum. I believe we have some minutes from the last meeting that need approved.
So moved.
Have a motion by Senator Duhamel to approve the minutes from the last meeting. A second by Senator Ewing. All in favor will say aye in approving the minutes. Those opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. We do not have any pages as far as I... Oh, hiding back in the back. Very good. Would you please come forward and tell us who you are? And it's your first day here. Welcome. And... what your plans are. There's another one, too. Just hit the button, and the mic turns green, and you're good to go.
I'm Carlene Berger. I'm from Winter area, and I'm just looking forward to learning more about local government.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. My wife's from the Winter area, too, White River. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
My name is Victoria Donovan. I'm from Arlington High School, and I would like to learn about government in South Dakota, and I'd hope to pursue a degree in public relations at either SDSU or UNL.
Very good. Welcome to the Capitol, and thanks for serving us. Okay. Senate Bill 179 is going to be deferred to the following Wednesday by the sponsor's request, and we're going to start with House Bill 1040 to increase the frequency of background investigations for certain state employees. Are there any proponents for House Bill 1040? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to the chair and members of the committee. My name is Mallory Barnett, and I'm here on behalf of the South Dakota Bureau of Human Resources. House Bill 1040 is a simple change. What we're doing is changing background checks from every 10 years to 5 years. Currently, certain state employees that have access to confidential information that's received from the IRS must successfully pass a criminal background investigation and then submit to a criminal background investigation every 10 years thereafter. The IRS recently changed those requirements and now require the background checks every 5 years. So that's what this bill does, is just change it from the 10 years to the 5 years to be in compliance with what the IRS has set forth. Thank you for your time today. I will stand by for any questions and would ask for your support.
Thank you. Any further proponents on House Bill 1040? Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Any opponents to House Bill 1040? Seeing none, we'll waive rebuttal and move to committee discussion, questions, or action. Senator Kamak.
I move do pass.
We have a do pass motion on House Bill 1040 by Senator Kamak, second by Senator Duhamel. Any comments on your motion? Seeing none. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Kamara.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye.
Shane Fish.
Aye.
Bismuth.
Aye.
Bellberg, excuse. Drew Hamill.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye. House Bill 1040, having received a majority vote of the committee, is hereby passed. And the chair will put that on consent. Okay. Next up is House Bill 1051 to revise certain provisions regarding public access to voter registration data. Do we have any proponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kia Warren, and I am the Director for the Division of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. What House Bill 1051 will do is remove the year of birth for when we sell voter registration files. And we met with Department of Homeland Security this past summer, and they asked us what information we do provide to people who buy the registration files, and we told them we limit the PII, personal identification information, but we do allow the year of birth. And they were pretty adamant that that year of birth could be the last piece of information someone needs to steal someone's identity. And so they highly suggested that we remove that from our voter file as well.
Okay. Any further proponents of House Bill 1051? Seeing none, are there any other proponents to House Bill 1051? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1051? Excuse me. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Janet Jensen, and I am the Republican State Committeewoman for Pennington County. And over the past 12 years, I have assisted with numerous campaigns. And in its current form, the bill basically eliminates eliminates the birth year. My concern is that when you're contacting voters, the birth year can provide valuable information for the candidate. In statute, the bill only addresses, at this point, the only thing information that's given is the birth year. It's not a birth date. It doesn't have the month. It doesn't have the day. It only addresses the birth year. You can certainly go on Facebook if you wanted, and you can find a lot of birth years, including month, date, and year for people if you really wanted to steal their identity. I also am just wondering, and I'm not sure how this works, but when a candidate accepts the voter registration from the Secretary of State, is there some kind of, do they sign some kind of form that, you know, protects that identity? Perhaps a form could be given to the candidate that would just say that they agree not to disclose, you know, the information as far as the birth year. And the candidate themselves would then be able to look at that list and form their own list according to the demographics. You know, you may want to address a young voter regarding a certain voting issue. You may want to address older people if it has to do with a certain issue. So I think that for a candidate, it is very important that they understand that they have access to the birth year of the voter. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any further opponents to House Bill 1051? Seeing none, we'll go to rebuttal. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kia Warren again. There are many different types of organizations that do purchase the statewide voter file, and like National Republican Committee, the National Democratic Party Committee, state parties. And so to have them sign a form, they would have to provide that form to everyone who they give that list to make sure that they're not providing that year of birth. So if it's a political party buying the statewide voter file, they want to give that to their candidates, and if they sign a form that they won't make that date or that year of birth public, they're going to have everyone that they provide that to sign a form and submit to our office as well.
Very good. Okay. At this time, we'll open to questions from the committee. Any questions from the committee? Senator Wismer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Ms. Warren, so what are the consequences of not changing the law to us. I didn't catch that.
Mr. Chair, we were just taking the advice of Department of Homeland Security to remove the year of birth.
Follow up? Senator Kamak, you have a question?
So when Homeland Security recommended that that be removed from the voter registration, the reason for that was identity theft?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Any further questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to the discussion or action.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator Kamak.
I move do pass.
Second.
We have a do pass motion on House Bill 1051 by Senator Kamak, second by Senator Ewing. Any discussion on your motion?
I think it's, especially in the current environment today, that it's we need to do everything we can to prevent identity theft and maybe take one tool away from the bad guys.
Okay. Well, as the chair, I'll just express my opinion. I really don't see where the year being available to the public is going to be an issue. I don't see as it's been an issue. And as one of the testifiers stated, it's readily available, oftentimes on Facebook, on Google, on the Internet. So, that will just ask the Secretary to call the roll on House Bill 1051. Those in favor, vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Go ahead and call the roll.
Senator Kamak.
Aye.
Ewing.
Aye.
Shane Fish. Excuse. Rismer. No. Younger. Excuse. Duhamel.
Aye.
Jensen.
No. Okay, very good. House Bill 1050. Yes. So we don't have a form for that. Okay. House Bill 1051, failing to have had a majority vote in favor of the bill, is failed. Okay, next up is House Bill 1144 to remove the requirement.
Oh. It just means that you have a
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kamak, go ahead.
Might I suggest that we defer final action on this until more members are present?
Okay. I think what we'll do is defer House Bill 1051 to next Wednesday. And we'll have more members present. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Next up is House Bill 1144 to remove the requirement for a ballot election in township elections if candidates are unopposed. Are there any proponents on House Bill 1144? I don't see the prime sponsor from the House here. Who's? Yeah, okay. I think what the committee will do, we'll go ahead and move forward to Senate Bill 182, and which is to provide for certain bonds for the construction of courthouses. Do we have any proponents of Senate Bill 182? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. Senator Susan Wismer, District 1, Britton, South Dakota. I'm bringing before you today a bill kind of on behalf of a former senator from my district. You'll see in the title is to provide for bonding for construction of courthouses. Senator Simmons, I'm having the pages distribute to you. Couple of pages showing it's the most recent trust account. Cash and investment fund balances in state reserve and trust funds as of October 31. The part of the of this that I'll be focusing on is the center part of the first page. On the front page there, you've got all of the different funds, including budget reserve and general revenue funds, and those are not the ones that I'm going to focus on today. Also, the bill as drafted didn't quite represent what I had in mind as far as the trust funds. As I got to looking at the trust funds, I realized I remembered wrong when I was giving drafting instructions. So I'll try to explain that as I go on through here. First, I'll start with the situation. It's one that we've heard several times last year in local government committee, but I'll localize it for my particular county today. Paul Simmons, who was a state senator from 1987 to about 2004, went on to serve our county as county commissioner. He served as chair of Appropriations Committee in his time here and had a pretty good feel for the resources that the state has at its disposal. This bill is proposed in the context today that the state, I feel, and Senator Simmons feels, that the state has really balanced its budget on the back of counties. Does it over and over, but most recently with Senate Bill 70, it's pushed our county into a crisis situation. Most every county in the northeastern quadrant of the state is making some local jail construction plans, and Senate Bill 70 created the need for that and additional facilities to either house prisoners or provide treatment services that were supposed to be a part of Senate Bill 70. But we've hamstrung the counties with the property tax limitations. We're not allowing them to keep up with growing local needs. And my home county really does have one of the most inadequate jails in the state. We spend a lot of time transporting prisoners. It's a very inefficient use of law enforcement time. We've been putting off improvements for years to our jail, but Senate Bill 70 created the crisis, and our public safety and really rule of law is at risk for lack of jail space in our county. Our courthouse was built in 1908. It's a gorgeous building. I fear that we're in danger of completely losing it, if not losing it functionally, as the county commissioners battle. Try to make decisions about how to replace, update facilities, doing something that the a financing package that the citizens will accept. Our county commissioners have been reviewing multiple versions of building plans in the last year. They're close to choosing a building plan and holding a public vote, but the cost estimates from the engineers, I feel that they've been proposing wouldn't be approved in a public vote. The latest estimate I've heard is about 60% of what it was originally. So now we get to this bill. Mr. Simmons was very familiar with the trust funds, as some of them came to be during his tenure in the Senate. I'm going to direct your attention now to that, as I said, the middle part of the first page where you can see general revenue and budget reserve funds. And then over to the right, you see three columns: principal balance, fair market value balance, and then growth less distributions.
I'd like to focus your attention on the Dakota Cement Trust Fund. You can see that the original principal for the Dakota Cement Trust Fund was $238 million. If, however, the fair market value balance is $338 million. And then the growth less distributions, there's $100 million over original principal in the Dakota Cement Trust Fund. There's $206 million over the original balance in the Education Enhancement Trust Fund. And there's $62 million over the principal balance and growth less distributions in the Healthcare Trust Fund of $61 million. So there's $368 million there over and above what the state had to start with in those funds, and still those funds have provided the distributions that has been expected of them. What Mr. Simmons is proposing is that when counties bond for, if Marshall County bonds for the construction of the courthouse, that the individual county be responsible for paying the principal on those bonds. However, this bill does ask the state to step in and help to finance the bonding costs and the interest cost, bonding and interest costs on the construction loan. He is suggesting that these trust funds, or any one of these, I'm picking Dakota Cement Trust Fund today, have plenty of extra over and above the original principal to be able to stand that cost. It took Paul quite a few tries to get this explained to me. I wouldn't be one bit surprised if it didn't make sense first time passed. I couldn't really decide for sure whether to present this bill because I knew that I had some drafting problems, but I really wanted to honor his request and also to use it as an opportunity to point out again the situation that we've put our local counties in as regards burdens that we've passed down from the state to the counties. And a small thing that could be done without any fiscal damage to the integrity of the South Dakota state budget to help those counties pick up where the state left off. I'll stand by for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any other proponents on Senate Bill 182? Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 182? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mark Kwasny with South Dakota Bureau of Finance and Management. If I may, I'll speak to, I guess, the bill as it's written and what was discussed here today in relation to the trust funds, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Do you have a badge with you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't see you. Okay, go ahead. Yes, you may.
I'll get signed in. I'm sorry, I had to run up from upstairs. So, Senate Bill 182 enforces the state to make payments from the Tobacco Prevention and Reduction Fund for all bonding costs associated for the purpose of reconstruction or maintenance of courthouses. First, the South Dakota Building Authority's purposes are laid out in 512.7, and it states that the Building Authority is for the state, Board of Regents, any officers, department, board, commission, or any other agency of the state. It's unclear if the authority has the legal authority to issue bonds for county courthouses. We have concerns regarding this and are working with bond counsel to further understand the implications. This bill would also require the Tobacco Prevention and Reduction Trust Fund to pay for both the bonding costs and interest on the bonds. The fund is currently used by the Department of Health for tobacco prevention and reduction programs. The fund pays for programs such as the SD Quit Line, Tobacco Control Program, Teens Against Tobacco Use Program. All of these programs are intended to decrease the utilization of tobacco in the state, which is the number one cause of preventable death and disability. These programs utilize all of the existing funding in that fund. The cost per bond issuance alone would be approximately $400,000. The amount of interest that the fund would have to pay for the bonds is unknown. Either way you look at it, diverting the funds from these programs would be the result. We would not be able to fund tobacco utilization programs or decrease tobacco utilization programs, and as a result, tobacco use would increase in the state. Now, as it relates to the trust funds, which I think, as was discussed, it was the intent for the legislation, I would say in fiscal year 2004, all of the trust funds distributed $29.6 million in ongoing revenue to the state. That's the first full year of distributions from the trust funds. In FY20, that's estimated to have increased to $39.8 million. The legislature has a policy, the Constitution and codified law outlines the way those disbursements occur based on 16-quarter moving average. If the policy then is to start going above and beyond this, we're going to start degrading the amount that gets dispersed from the trust fund on an ongoing basis. If this had been the policy, say, back in 2004, we could be looking at $20 million less in ongoing revenues to the state, which are used to support things like education, health care, and other ongoing needs of the state. So that those funds were established and the distributions are established to support growth in those funds that outweighs the increase in inflation. I know right now with the way the markets are that the balances are high, but at any given time, those balances could decrease by 50%. And I think that that's something we must be aware of. And we would want to look at the policies associated with those disbursements and what we've done and how that they've become a positive generator of ongoing revenue to the state. With that, I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponents to Senate Bill 182? Any further opponents to Senate Bill 182? Seeing none, we'll go to rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wismer again. I appreciate very much Mr. Quasney's addressing the bill discussion in terms of the actual trusts here. The only point I'll add is that we're completely ignoring that we're taking all these millions of dollars out of circulation in the state's economy. I sat by in a committee meeting sometime since this session has started where a legislator asked the person that was testifying if they could tell if this $20 million that had been, I can't remember if it had been a tax increase or something else, if they could tell, you know, that $20 million had made a difference to the state's economy. Here we're leaving $368 million sitting in the state's coffers that could be percolating through the state instead of sitting here earning interest. Deficit spending at the federal level, tax cuts, they're all about getting money into circulation. That's not what the state of South Dakota is doing when they leave money sitting in their bank accounts and they justify it by saying, oh, we're making money on this. You're also taking hundreds of millions of dollars out of the circulation of the economy, which is typically the justification for not doing tax increases. Oh, we don't want to take this money out of the hands of citizens. So I really have I and as well as Mr. Simmons have a lot of trouble with the state socking as much money away as they do when we have so many unaddressed needs, and particularly in the context of my discussion here today, where the state has passed down to the counties expenses that have allowed them to balance their budget, but have created serious budget issues at the county level. I very much appreciate your patience in listening to my this bill today. I hope you keep it in mind even if I didn't do the best job of getting it drafted. We do have several alternatives that we could use and that I think we have a responsibility to use and to look for in assisting counties meet obligations that the state has passed down to them without providing them adequate funding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. At this time, we'll move to committee questions. Any questions of the committee? Any questions from the committee members? Well, any discussion? Any motions from the committee? Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 182 to the 41st day.
We have a motion to move Senate Bill 182 to the 41st day. Do we have a second? By Senator Ewing, second by Senator Kamak. Any comments on your motion? Senator Ewing, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, with all due respect to the prime sponsor, I too come from a community that's in need of a new jail. And I know that my community is going to have to be addressing that very soon. We've outgrown our facility, and it's very old, and the need is there for a new facility. However, I'm really reluctant to go down this road on the way this bill is structured. And, I'm glad we're having the discussion because it's making more people aware of the issues that we have, but I just can't support this bill as written.
Okay. Senator Kamak.
And I'm aware of at least two individuals on this committee that have some experiences being county commissioners. And I certainly, we certainly understand the mind that we've got the counties in. But I don't think that this one is quite ready for prime time. So with that, I would support the motion.
Any further comments of the committee members? Okay. Well, the chair would just say that I certainly understand the argument made by Senator Wismer, and Senate Bill 70 was a major blunder, and the result was that it put an incredible burden on local governments. And so I'm going to be voting in favor of the bill just as a protest vote because we need to do something to correct the situation that 70 created a few years ago. So having said that, I think we'll go ahead and have the secretary call the roll, please.
Senator Kamak.
Aye.
Shane
Fish. No.
Wismer.
Aye.
Hamburg. Excuse. Jim Hamill.
Clarify, this is to move to the 41st day, correct?
Correct.
Aye.
Jensen?
No. Okay, Senate Bill 182 having received a majority vote of the committee is hereby passed to the 41st day. Had you going down there, didn't I? Okay. The sponsor of House Bill 1144 is unavailable, so we will be deferring that to Wednesday. Okay, that is it for today. Do we have any other business before the committee? Okay, it's been brought to the chair's attention that we need to have a committee vote on 1051 to defer. Okay.
Did you hear any?
We have enough. Okay, being how we have a quorum here, I think we will go ahead and look at House Bill 1051 to provide certain provisions regarding public access to voter registration data. And the motion was do pass by Senator. Okay, a new motion. Okay. Okay, at this time we'll entertain a new motion to pass House Bill 1051.
Mr. Schmack, go ahead. Mr. Chair, I would move to do pass.
We have a do pass motion on House Bill 1051 by Senator Schmack, second by Senator Duhamel. Any comments on your motion?
We had discussed it earlier, and I feel that the need to protect privacy and prevent identity theft is important enough to bring the provisions of this bill forward.
Okay. Any further? Senator Duhamel?
I would agree with Senator Kamak. A lot of people on Facebook choose not to put their personal information and often put erroneous birth dates. So people are trying in many ways to protect their identity. I don't think the state should be giving a birth year.
Well, the chair disagrees and thinks that we should have the year on the information available to the public, and I think it's available in numerous places and sources. So having said that, I believe we'll go ahead and have the secretary call the roll on House Bill 1051. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Kamak.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye.
Chainfish.
No.
Prisoner. Excuse
Duhamel. Aye. Jensen. No. House Bill 1051, having failed to receive a majority of the committees, has failed. Okay, at this time we'll entertain any further business. If not, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, we still either need to defer this to another day or make another motion for final disposition.
You need four people, correct, in order to make pass any motion.
Right? Mr. Chair.
Now it failed. Right.
Mr. Chair. In light of the deadlock, I would propose that we go back to the original plan of deferring the bill. And that would require a vote because we've already had some action.
Second.
And if we vote not to do that,
then we are still deadlocked, Mr. Chairman, and you would have to have another vote because the bill has not been finally disposed of. So then someone would have to make another vote to defer to the 44th day or pass, or we would have to get another person, Senator Youngberg, to come and vote on the bill. You could, and then we would still need four votes to support deferring it to the 41st day.
Okay, I think we'll go ahead and take a vote to defer House Bill 1051 to next Wednesday. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Would the secretary please call the roll?
Senator Kamak.
Aye.
Hewing.
Aye.
Chainfish.
Aye.
Prisoner.
Aye.
Youngberg. Excuse. Duhamel.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye. Okay, House Bill 1051, having received a majority vote to be deferred to next Wednesday, has passed. Okay, at this time we'll entertain any further discussion. Any breaking news? Otherwise. I have a motion by Senator Ewing to adjourn, second by Senator Duhamel. All in favor say aye. Those opposed nay. We are adjourned.